The Rudy Valley Hour. Tonight's headliners, Edward Everett Horton, Colonel Lemuel Q. Stupnagel, Eddie Garr.
Hi-ho, everybody. This is Rudy Valley and Company. In case you haven't been attentive lately, permit me to repeat. Our new summer policy might be summed up as accent on laughter. Exhibit A tonight, the excitable Edward Everett Horton, busiest of picture comedians. Mr. Horton's funny sayings this evening are exactly 272 years old, a record even for radio. They were written by a Frenchman named Molière in 1666 and are part of a classic play called The Doctor in Spite of Himself. Exhibit B, the preposterous Colonel Stupnagel, inventor of the alarm clock with half a bell so that when two people are sleeping in a room, only one will wake up when it rings. The Colonel, like Molière, is a classic, but newer. Exhibit C, the dependable Eddie Garr, who is more of a modernist, who is, in fact, the cleverest of the junior comics along the main stem. In and around these funny men, we have designed a light-hearted pattern of words and music furnished by Joe Soger, banjoist, the Oxford Boys, novelty group, the Gentlemen Songsters, the Connecticut Yankees, and your humble, obedient servant who asks your favor for
the Rudy Valley Hour. Act One, presented by the makers of Royal Desserts, Royal Gelatin, and Royal Puddings.
There's a song in the air, but the fair senorita doesn't seem to care for the song in the air. Oh, I'll sing to the mule if you're sure she won't think that I am just a fool serenading a
like Eddie Garr because his comedy is sharp, clean, witty, free from that standard stereotyped out of the filing cabinet effect. Also because he's a pleasant fellow personally, modest and unassuming. With our blessing, he enters. Eddie Garr.
Well, Thank you. Thank you, Rudy. Thank you very much for that very lovely introduction. But before I start and go any further, I'd like to make a little announcement. Any resemblance between the jokes used on this program and the jokes of any other comedian, living or dead, is not a coincidence. I also wish to announce that the gowns worn in this mighty production are all air-cooled and designed by Scarlett O'Hara, who makes the gown with the wind. You take the east route, I'll take the west route. I'll be in Ireland before you. Ah, but this is a lovely audience. You know, I'm a little tired tonight. That's what's the matter with me. I thought that would do better. I can't blame it on the writers. I made it up myself. But I'm tired, that's it. I was out playing golf this morning with two Scotchmen. One of them had a paralytic stroke. The other one made him count it. But I love the way you laugh here. You know, I'm not used to this. You're going to spoil me. Oh, this is a pleasure. You know, I'm used to working in nightclubs, and it's a little different there. You don't get the attention. Waiters are dropping trays, arguments. The other night, I walked out in the place, and as soon as I got on the floor, some fella says, "Hey, get it off. Go home." Of course, I always say the customer's always tight. And another place, I walked out one night, there was a beautiful girl sitting right in front of me. Oh, she was gorgeous. I couldn't help noticing her. Guess that's because I'm broad-minded. But she was very lovely. And I heard her say to her boyfriend, she says, "Now, when you see this fella guy, I've heard about him." Boyfriend says, "Never mind him. Concentrate on me. I'm paying this check." How am I going to make him laugh? Or a fella will come in with his wife, and he didn't want to go out in the first place. But as soon as he comes home from work, his wife says, "Well, honey, got your clothes all laid out. Tonight we're going to the Silver Clipper." He says, "What are you talking about, the Silver Clipper?" She says, "You know, the nightclub." He says, "You mean the Silver Clipper and Silver Slipper, and I'm not going." She says, "Now, look, did you see the market today? Don't bother me with nightclubs. I'm tired. I just want to relax here." So they argue for a half hour. Finally, they compromise and go to the Silver Slipper. As soon as he walks in the door, somebody snatches his hat. He knows he'll have to buy that back again. He walks up to the head waiter. The head waiter only speaks to parties of six or more. Head waiter says, "Good evening, how many?" The fellow says, "Two." Head waiter says, "Two?" And he looks around for a bad table. If he can't find one, he sets one up someplace. Or he sits them beside a couple of drunks, and as soon as the fellow sits down, one of the drunks falls on him. Well, he doesn't want any trouble with the drunk. He says, "I beg your pardon." Drunk says, "I heard that remark. You can't talk that way about American womanhood." "Who's the dame with you? Hey, come on over and sit with us. Leave that guy. He's a flat tire." Fella says, "Honey, there's another table over there. Let's move over there." So they go over to the other table, and he sits down. The busboy comes over, steps on his foot, spills water on him, and hands him a menu. And he looks at the menu and he says, "Oh, honey, we could have gone to the mountains for a weekend." I've got to make him laugh now. So he orders some soup. They bring him the soup and the soup is cold. Then I come on. I'm not so hot either. But because his soup is cold, I'm terrible. So he calls a busy waiter and he says, "Waiter, I think my soup is cold." The waiter says, "Listen, buddy, don't stop me now. I got no time for rumors." So he orders a steak. They bring him the steak, and he tries to cut it and fractures his wrist. He says, "Waiter, get the manager. I can't eat this steak." The waiter says, "It's no use, buddy. He won't eat it either." He says, "Well, take it back." He says, "I can't take it back. You bent it." So he orders some French pastry. They bring him the tray. He says, "I'll have that chocolate eclair." Waiter says, "That's no eclair. That's my thumb." Now he's good and disgusted. He says, "Pardon me, honey, I'll be back in a minute." And he leaves and he comes back a half hour later, plastered. So he sends for the check. The waiter gives him the check and he says, "Oh, waiter, I think you made a mistake here. Because I've got more money than this." His wife says, "Come on, we're going home. You're drunk. Fine way for you to act the first time you take me out." He said, "Now, wait a minute, honey, we just got here." "No, I won't wait a minute. Get your hat, we're going." So they go down and get in a taxi cab. They start going home and says, "Now, look, honey, while we're out, we might as well stop in at Dempsey's." "No, we won't stop at that. Well, let's go to the Riviera." "No, we won't go. No. Finally, the taxi driver turned around. He says, "Hey, buddy, get rid of that dame. I'll get you a girl who'll say yes once in a while." So That's the trouble I have in nightclubs, but here it's a pleasure. You're all such a lovely audience. You look like you all come in here laughing like this. I want to see the Rudy Valley show tonight. Oh, and you're so nice, I'm going to sing a song. I have a little song entitled Show Me the Way to Go Home, dedicated to Douglas Corrigan. fall in love, says my heart. It's romance, take a chance, says my heart. But each time that I'm almost in your arms, this old school teacher brain of mine keeps ringing in false alarms. Then my head rules instead, and I'm wise to the scheme of that gleam in your eye. Though I kiss and run, but the moment we're apart, oh, you fool, that was love, says my heart. Oh, and this time I know it's really love. My heart tells me it's love. What difference does it make if she's got $65 million? I know it's love. I would love her just as much if she only had $64 million. Yes, sir, but my brain tells me don't be a fool. Don't make a match like this. You have everything. You have your job with your pick and shovel to lean on. And your little furnished room overlooking Central Park. Completely, with the beautiful picture of Loretta Young pasted up on the wall. She had to be pasted up there three times. The picture of Max Schmeling, he only had to be pasted once. All right, so she is 40 years old. She doesn't look it. She looks 55. And when I see her poor, bent old father chained down with the bonds of care, utility bonds, United States government bonds, then I know it's love. I even wrote to two of my oldest friends for advice, and both Dunn and Bradstreet told me that love is everything. So I went up to see her in her little home where she lives all alone with her father and 48 servants. As I walked into the room and saw that poor kid sitting there on a solid gold sofa, my heart went out to her, sitting there shivering in her silver fox lounging pajamas. So I pushed aside 117 bracelets, 45 rings, and there I found her little hand. I said, darling, let me take you away from all this. And so we were married. We had a quiet little wedding in the Yankee Stadium. Just a handful of friends, enough to fill the right field bleachers. And now every night when I come home and I look at our little baby, I gaze fondly at my wife and I say, darling, you don't think he's going to take after your family, do you? And she gazes fondly up at me and she says, no, dear. He's going to be just like you, a big bum. So I listen and run, but the moment we're apart, oh, you fool, that was love. That was love, oh, you fool, says my heart.
Having just completed a new picture with friend Crosby, Edward Everett Horton is east on vacation. We have summoned him down to the sweltering city from Lake George to enact the leading role in a comedy which is nearly 300 years old. Molière's The Doctor in Spite of Himself. Presenting Edward Everett Horton.
Thank you very much. Very much indeed. Very much indeed. Thank you. Well, Molière's play, The Doctor in Spite of Himself, is one of the classics of comedy. It was first performed in 1666, and it's just as funny today as it was then, we hope. In order to set the date, 1666, we must remember that Shakespeare died in 1616, the Pilgrims landed in 1620, and I had not as yet cast my first vote. So you see, we're really going back. Our play takes place in ancient France, when the people knew very little about medicine, and the doctors knew even less. It is a story of Sganarelle, a woodcutter, whose black eye tells us that he has just had one of his many battles with his wife. His wife has two black eyes, and she's rather mad. Two men have been looking for a doctor, and so, to get even with Scannarell, his wife tells these men that he, Scannarell, is one of the best doctors in the country, but one of the most eccentric. So eccentric, she says, that he tries to tell people he's nothing but a woodcutter, and you actually have to beat him over the head to get him to admit that he is a doctor. As our scene opens, two men approach. That is to say, they draw near unto Scannarell, who is cutting wood.
Pardon me, but is your name Scannarell?
What?
I asked you if your name was Scannarell.
Oh, so you did, yes. Well, can you spell it?
My dear man,
yes,
me...
Yes, I know. I know you want to know if my name is Scannarell.
Precisely.
Well, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. It depends. It depends on what you want with him, with me.
Well, I'm very glad to meet you, sir. We've been recommended to you, and we implore your help.
Anything in my little trade I'm perfectly willing to do.
We weren't sure we could get you so easily. Clever people are so much in demand.
Well, that's very... I beg pardon?
I say, clever people are so much in demand.
Oh, I thought you said that. Yes, it sounded like that. Yes, your French is so beautiful. It's so idiomatic, yeah. Well, it's true. I am the best woodcutter in this part of the country.
Oh, sir.
I might even say that I'm the best woodcutter in the world.
Well, we haven't come to...
Well, I charge 100 sous for a cord of wood.
Well, don't you think...
Couldn't sell them for less.
Oh, of course, this is a joke.
It is no joke at all. 100 sous and not a farthing, not a halfpenny, not a ruble, not a... Oh, dear me, what is the little coin? Don't tell me it's a centime, not a centime less.
Please, sir, do you think such a learned man, such a famous person as you, should disguise himself and keep his true talents buried?
Well, it is possible. What are you talking about?
Come now, you can't fool us. We know what we know.
Well, of course you know what you know. Naturally, everybody knows what they know, but what do you know? Who do you think I am?
Scannarell, the great doctor.
A doctor? Did you say a doctor? I? Scannarell, a doctor? Oh, you're not only mistaken, you're stupid. I'm not a doctor. I never was. I wouldn't be a doctor with the idea. Pardon me, please. I'm wasting time here. I'll go on with my woodcutting.
He's the most unusual doctor I ever met.
I guess the old woman was right. You have to beat him over the head to get him to admit it.
Yes. I hate to do it.
Well, here's a good stick.
We'll give him one more chance. Sir.
Yes?
I ask you once more. Are you or are you not a doctor?
And I tell you for the last time, no, I am not a doctor.
We'll see about that. Here, take this.
Yeah. Thank you.
And this.
Oh,
here's another for you.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Wait.
And another.
Oh, but stop it. Stop it. Yes. Stop. All right. Oh, my word. I'll be a doctor, of course. Certainly. I'll be anything you want. My jaw, look at that. It's all swollen, isn't it? I'll be a dentist if necessary. Yeah. You're sure I'm a doctor?
Positive.
Well, maybe I am. Don't you?
Why, you're the cleverest doctor in the world.
Oh, the devil I am.
I have a daughter who has suddenly lost her speech.
Well, why do you come to me? I haven't found it.
If you cure her, you can name your own fee.
Oh, really? Well, what would I name it? I don't know any name. Name my own fee.
As much as you like.
As much as I like. Name? Oh, well, of course. In that case, I certainly am a doctor. I must have forgotten it. Definitely, I forgot it. But I remember it now. Oh, yes. Where do I go?
Well, first, I think you should go home.
Yes?
And put on some better clothes.
Well, it's just my other suit.
Then come to number 15, Rue de la Grande.
15, Rue de... Oh, and I name my own fee.
Exactly.
Oh, well, don't you worry. I'll be there. Yes. 15, Rue de la Grande.
Are you the great doctor, Scannarell?
Out of my way, young fellow, out of my way. Can't you see I'm in a hurry? I go upon an errand of Esculapius.
But I just wanted to tell you that the girl you're going to see isn't really sick at all.
Uh-huh, yes, don't bother me. Don't. Who are you?
My name is Leander, and I...
Oh, Leander. Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, who cares? I shouldn't have asked you. Don't bother me. Out of my way. Here, come here. Don't run away like that. What are you talking about? You say she isn't sick? What's the matter with her?
She's in love with me, but her father wants her to marry somebody else. So she's just making believe she can't talk.
Oh, that's very interesting, young man. That's very interesting, yes. You set my mind at ease. Here, don't say a word to anyone. Here's a centime for you. Run along. Don't follow me like this. Stop it. Stop it. Get away from me. Sell your violets. Go ahead. Not sick, eh? Well, she will be when I get through with her. Let me see. What house is it? 15, Rue de la Grande. Oh, this is the house right here. Of course. It must be.
Ah, here you are, Dr. Scannarell.
Where is she?
Right in here, Doctor. Mm-hmm. Will you come this way?
Gladly.
We'll go right into the patient.
In this room? A room like this with such a low ceiling? Oh, no place for a patient at all. What's that in the bed? Is that the patient?
Yes. That's my daughter.
Oh, no. Your daughter? Why, that's impossible. Oh, look, she's beautiful. Oh, of course. Look at that hair. Oh, that's her own hair, isn't it? Oh, dear. Well, my girl, tell me, what's the trouble?
Hi, he, ho, ha.
What'd you say?
Hi-ho-ha.
Oh, my word. What kind of language is that? Hi-he-ho-ha. What are you talking about?
That's just the trouble, Doctor. She's lost her speech, and now we have to postpone the marriage.
Postpone it? Why?
Because the young man I have chosen won't marry a dumb wife.
Oh, really? Oh, well, then I think that I have the wrong patient. He's the one that's sick.
I'll give you anything if you'll only cure my daughter.
Oh, anything, yes. That is, I name my own fee. Oh, well, I've got the right patient, all right. Yes, I mustn't forget that. May I feel your pulse, sir?
My pulse?
Yes, I always feel the father's pulse first.
Oh, very odd.
No, just quiet. Not a word now, please. Oh, dear. Oh, my, your pulse tells me that your daughter is dumb.
That's true. You discovered it immediately.
I knew he was a good doctor.
Thank you. Thank you very kindly. Yes, we great doctors, you see, we know matters of science. An ordinary doctor wouldn't have known a thing about it. But as you see, I hit the nail on the head right away. Your daughter, sir, is dumb.
Yes, but what is the cause of it?
Oh, it's very simple. It is caused, sir, by loss of speech.
And what is the cause of that?
Ah, well, there you are. Aristotle on the subject says, Aristotle, he says, in the middle of the page, he says a great many clever things.
Yes,
Aristotle,
I dare say.
Oh, he was a great man, you know, very great man. Aristotle. I say Aristotle was a great man, a very great man, yes. But great as he was, I hold that this loss of speech is caused by certain humors. Humors. Among us learned men, we call them peccant humors. Peccant. That is to say, peccant. Yes. You understand Latin?
Not in the least.
Oh, really? Oh, my. And you, sir, and you?
Not a word.
Oh, not a word. I can count on that, eh? Oh, how unfortunate, yes. Well, then, Cabricius R.C., bonum, esne oratio latinus. Etiam quare, quare means why, in Latin means why. See, it's an interrogation, why, yes. Quia substantivo et adjectium concordat.
What a clever man.
Oh, yes. Why didn't I study Latin?
Yeah, a little late now, isn't it? Yes. So, gentlemen, as I say, you see, the vapors pass from the left side where the liver is to the right side where the heart is.
But I always thought that the heart was on the left side.
Oh, you couldn't think. You couldn't. Oh, did you? Well, it used to be that way, but we've changed all that.
I'm sorry. I didn't know that.
Well, quite naturally. That's what makes you what you are and what makes me a doctor, of course.
But yes. What do you think should be done, Doctor?
Well, sir, that is a very great and a very subtle question. It depends so much upon whether men or women are more easily cured. Aristotle and Socrates differ slightly on the subject. Aristotle says yes. Socrates says no. I say yes and no. Inasmuch as the incongruity of the opaque humors, which are found in the natural temperament of women, causes the brutal part to struggle for mastery over the sensitive, we find the conflict of opinion depends so much upon the oblique motion of the circle of the moon. And as the sun, which beams on the concavity of the earth,
doctor,
meets with the...
Doctor, what the devil are you talking about?
She speaks! She speaks! Oh, doctor, oh, great doctor, you have cured her.
It gave me quite a little trouble.
Yes, Father, I've recovered my speech, but only to tell you that I will not marry Horace.
Now?
And the only man I will marry is Leander.
But
you can't change my mind.
Now,
nothing at all that you can say will make any difference. I've made up my mind.
I know, but...
You can try as much as you want.
Oh, stop talking. Dr. Scannarell, I beseech you, make her dumb again.
Oh, I can't do that, sir, but if I had a stick, I could make you deaf.
No, thank you. Lucinda, if you...
No, nothing you can say will make a bit of difference. I won't marry Horace.
You will marry Horace tonight?
Stop the argument. My dear man, there is only one way that you can make her shut up.
Well, what is it? Tell me.
Let her marry whoever she wants to.
I guess I'll have to. All right, anything, as long as you keep your mouth shut. You shall marry anyone, whoever you want.
Okay.
Ah, it worked. Doctor, you shall be rewarded for this.
I certainly shall when you get my bill. 50,000 and 5 francs. 5 francs for curing your charming daughter and 10,000 francs apiece for the clouts on the head that you gave me. Is that satisfactory?
Monsieur.
Merci.
Merci.
Monsieur.
Next time your family is parched and hot, take a tip from the tropics. Remember, in lands where it's always hot, nature provides certain tropical fruits to help offset the heat. Limes, lemons, pineapples, and delicious golden oranges. And how welcome their flavor is these hot days, tart and clean and refreshing. Enjoy that goodness often in the tropical flavors of royal gelatin. Royal orange, royal lemon, lime, and pineapple. Bring your royal gelatin, cool and shimmering, right from the refrigerator to the table. Have it often. Buy royal gelatin from your grocer tomorrow. The Rudy Valley Hour will continue in just a moment.
WEAF, New York.
A moment having duly elapsed, the network pulls itself together, and we move forward to encounter Joe Soja, the Oxford Boys, and Colonel Lemuel Q. Stoopnagel, among other notables involved in...
The Rudy Valley Hour, Act Two, brought to you by Fleischmann's Yeast, the tonic food that helps so many people over 40 ward off a slump in energy at middle age, that helps you feel energetic and young for your age.
A medley of popular tunes, including The Moon Looks Down and Laughs, Rain in My Eyes, and Honey on the Moon. Carol Gould and I will share the vocal honors. The moon looks down and laughs and says, I told you so. Why did I let you go away? I was so sure you loved me madly. And when I wanted you, you gladly come back to me. I never realized the day we said goodbye how very sorry I would be. And every night when I walk up and down this lonesome town, the moon looks down and laughs at me.
A motor car or a bus. Just any old bench in any old park is made to order for us. There's honey on the moon tonight, and I'm out to enjoy it. What a night to enjoy it with a honey like you.
According to insiders, a baseball team that's weak down the center alley, that is, the line running from catcher through second base to center field, is a bad ball club, doomed to languish in second division. A like fate awaits a radio show that lags in the middle. To give us a lift over the halfway mark tonight, we've engaged Joe Soja and the Oxford Boys. First, Joe. He ranks with Eddie Peabody and Roy Smek among plectrum specialists, meaning he's one of the world's three best banjo and guitar solists. A lift from Joe Soja. temporarily from my colleague, Hal Kemp, on the good old Astor roof. These three youngsters, originally from St. Paul, illustrate a trend. The avid, radio-fostered interest displayed by the youth of the nation in dance band leaders and dance band styles. Using only one musical instrument, the guitar, the Oxford Boys will give you glimpses of eight popular dance bands. On my word of honor, they use only their own vocal cords and adjacent parts to create what sounds like a brass section. The Oxford Boys.
We haven't got a theme song to offer you. We haven't got a theme song to offer you. But we want to bring to you the theme songs of the others who swing them on the radio. While the old folks did enjoy it, they would sit all night and listen
to Henry Bussey and his golden trumpet. Okay, Hank, play on up. And now we leave Henry Bussey, so let's dance a while to the original K. Kaiser style. And folks, hi-yo. Present Mr. Hay Babbitt.
I'm always thinking of you.
So long, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, we bring you the Royal Hawaiians from Hotel Honolulu in Hawaii.
Of stuff.
Floyd Bennett Field, New York.
Douglas Corgan takes off for California.
Here he comes.
Dublin.
Now we bring you the distinctive style of Hal Kemp.
Climbing up the ladder of love to find the one who waits for me.
Got a date with an angel. Got to meet her at 7. Got a date with an angel. I'm on my way to heaven.
And now it's that sentimental gentleman a swing, Tommy Dorsey, his trombone and his band. Change the tempo with Horace Hite and the Trumpeteers, and the song is Do You Ever Think of Me? Now it's Wayne King, the Waltz King. Now
Well, it's that king of corn, Clyde McCoy, and his tune is Sugar Blue.
Tell yourself, I'm too young to be getting tired out so soon. Or you say, at my age...
Oh, landlord, fill the flowing bowl until it doth run over. Oh, landlord, fill the flowing bowl until it doth run over.
Every year, Rudy Valley takes the Connecticut Yankees and his company of artists who have been appearing with him to his lodge at Lake Geezer, Lovell, Maine, for a glorious 5 days outing. Tomorrow's trip will be the 7th annual vacation fiesta. As has been the traditional custom at this time, Rudy plays a fantasy on the University of Maine Stein song. I'm sure we all wish the boys good weather and a happy holiday.
Landlord, fill the flowing bowl until it doth run over. Oh, landlord,
fill the flowing bowl until it doth run over. When the silvery moon is shining, all the hills of dear old Maine, I'm longing so to see the folks at home, sweet home again. Oh, where is my wandering boy? I hear that sweet refrain. When the silvery moon is shining, o'er the hills of dear old Maine.
landlord, fill the blowing bowl until it doth run over. Oh, landlord, fill the blowing bowl until it doth run over. She loved me in the fall, but last night on the back porch, she loved me best of all.
To the spring, its glorious happiness, to the youth, to the fire, to the life that is moving and calling us, to the gods, to the fates, to the rulers of men and their destinies, to the lips, to the eyes, to the girl who will love us someday.
Oh, Bill, the night's old name, stop, to the laughter's rings, stand, and drink a toast once again, let every loyal Maine man sing, then drink, to all the happy hours, drink. To the careless days, drink to Maine, alma mater, the college of our hearts.
At this point, enter Colonel Stoopnagel in the role of Waker Upper. A role which he may be expected to handle with familiarity and ease once he's awake himself. Gentlemen, a little noise for the Colonel.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you, Rudy.
You're welcome, Colonel, I'm sure.
Boy, that's a hilarious opening routine. But it might have been worse. I could have started talking about the weather like everyone else does, but that just wouldn't be me, and I do mean wouldn't. After all, you can't run away from the weather any more than you can run away from yourself, because no matter where you go, there's weather, and sometimes yourself. And I do mean. There are practically two outstanding kinds of weather. Namely, burr weather and pew weather. Or, sort of silly, I know. Or, couched in simpler terms, burr and pew. Now, let's take pew weather first, because summer's so near at hand.
Pardon me just a moment, Colonel. This is the third week in July.
I'm sorry, Rudy. I thought it was the week you promised me I'd be on. It's just as well, though. I had to play Santa Claus that night anyway. Now, to get back in the pew mood, of course you realize that the sun was here long before fire was, making it very difficult for the primitive man to cook himself a hot meal. Imagine trying to hold a chicken in the sun long enough for it to become southern fried, with mashed potatoes on the side, corn on the cob, 65 cents on the blue plate luncheon, and tables for ladies. And still, there was no fire. Until one day, a primitive man with a whole big bunch of super peachy civic pride donated a fire engine to Cave 28. So they simply had to discover a fire. But that didn't stop the sun one bit. It kept on beaming, rain or shine, light or dark, draft or in bottles. And do you like your beer with a high collar or open at the neck? See what the boys in the control room will have. When it rains and the sun shines, we have a rainbow of many colors, especially last week when people all over the world could look up at the sky and see plenty of hues.
Colonel, I think Hughes is one of the grandest fellows in the world.
Thanks, Ruby. I think Hughes is a great guy yourself.
But to return to the thing in hand, many people have asked me how to stay comfortable in real Hugh weather. I have found two solutions to this problem. Now, the first, or B, is to buy a sweepstakes ticket and present it to the government. When the government wins, you take the taxes and go to Alaska. The second, or A, is to buy my latest invention, an electric fan made entirely of ice. You take this frigid fan up to your hot room, turn it on, and boom, it starts to melt before your eyes. A few of you might say that isn't any good at all. Well, it isn't. But when you see a nice large fan melt right under your nose, you're going to realize how hot your room really is and go somewhere where it's cool. Now, the sun, known to his intimates as Old Sol, is responsible for more things than just weather. The very collar that you wear is a byproduct of the sun. Everybody knows that collars are just stuff for people to get hot under the... And when you do, there are only three courses to take. Elementary French, intermediate algebra, and one other. Or you can go to the beach. And when you go to the beach, be sure to pick one that's not too crowded, because I went to a crowded beach in New Jersey last week, and it was so jammed that only the top layer of people got sunburned. And for those of you who burn easily, I would suggest that you rub some butter on your face, or, if you have no butter handy, just smear your pan with lard. Of course, beaches aren't any fun if you can't swim, and you can't swim until you've read How to Swim by Colonel Lifeuel Q. Gardenagel. The first few lessons can be studied at home. I quote from the pamphlet. Take the rug from the living room floor and you lie down there instead. Now kick. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Simon says thumbs up. Simon says thumbs down. Wiggle waggle. Up, up. Caught you that time. Now continue to kick until the family downstairs hits the ceiling with a broom handle. Then turn to lesson two and float a while. Float until the folks downstairs find something to do with a broom. If there's any doubt on this point, simply lean out the window and tell them. Now you're ready for the beach. Lesson three says, walk slowly into deep water and lie face downward on the ocean bed. Now take a deep breath and spring upwards. If you don't reach the surface in 20 minutes, there's no charge for the lesson, and we call for the pamphlet.
Hold on, Colonel. What about the people that don't like to go swimming at the beach?
What's that again, Curly?
I say, what about the people that don't like to go swimming?
Oh, that. Well, they could just wait around until the burr weather sets in. You know, October, December. Then in just a few short months, it's hue weather, and they can look forward again to not swimming at the beach. Of course, beaches aren't any fun if you can't swim, and you can't swim until you've read How to Swim by Colonel Lifeuel... Oh, I said that before, didn't I? Which reminds me that I've got to get back to my place in South Norwalk, Connecticut. And, Rudy, you have no idea how invigorating it is up there.
Really healthy, eh, Colonel?
Oh, healthy. Even the midgets are 6 feet tall. And talk about vegetables. Why, our corn is 10 feet high the day after we plant it.
Well, I knew vegetables were high, but why is it necessary to have corn 10 feet tall, Colonel?
So the midgets don't have to stoop over to pick it. And another thing, Rudy, in my garden...
Tut-tut, Colonel, let's save your garden for another time.
Soon, I hope.
Yes, in the burr weather.
And now, in closing, I want to say goodnight to you folks and to Rudy, too.
Rudy, too, to you, Colonel.
Woo-hoo!
A few words now to and about people over 40. Week, more notable names and notions with a lineup headed by Gertrude Lawrence, Douglas Montgomery, Willie Howard, and Ezra Stone. The Valley Company leaves tonight for Lake Teaser, stopping off to play at Old Orchard Beach, Maine, tomorrow night, Friday, and on the way back to play at Ballalair, Worcester, Massachusetts, Wednesday, July 27th. This is Rudy Valley bidding you all good night.
Included on this program, Says My Heart from Coconut Grove. This is the National Broadcasting Company.